Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science. Thank you, MOTAT. And I want to jump straight in because these are some big topics, Marcus, bringing us into the new year.
Yeah, there are. And the first one in particular, you've probably heard in the news recently. Yes. There's a new virus, and it seems to be starting to grow a little bit at an alarming rate.
Yes.
Yeah. So
how do we, one, define a new virus? Two, what is an alarming rate? And by growing, does that just mean that there are cases outside of the country it originated from?
Yes, now there are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I mean, many questions.
I'll just end it with the last question. this virus is new to science. In other words, it's got a new genome, but it is related to already known viruses.
Right.
It's obviously mutated from a known virus.
Mm-hmm.
It is mainly in China right now. But in the last few days, it has more than doubled in terms of the number of recorded cases. The outbreak began sort of earlier this month or the end of last year, and now the Chinese government, or this is of a couple of days ago, the Chinese government's reporting 136 cases in Wuhan, which is where they think the virus originated. And there's now four, well, as of 2 days ago, there were four cases outside of the country, including one in South Korea. And then more recently, there now seems to be a case in the US.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So this is something we should be alarmed about.
Something that we should keep an eye on. Many of you may remember the SARS virus in the early 2000s, which killed hundreds of people. This virus is related to that.
Okay.
Okay. So it is... it originated in animals, and they think it originated in pigs. And the initial jump was from pigs in this region in Wuhan into humans. And the question is then always, how readily does it transmit from human to human? Because some viruses don't so much, some viruses really, really do. And it seems like this one does, although it's not clear how readily it does.
Mm. A number of the cases that have been recorded are medical staff, right? So these are people that would have had direct exposure to that.
Right. So they're talking about sort of the second and third generation of the virus, I guess. So the first generation was the people who caught it directly from the animals.
Okay.
And the second would be the first person-to-person transmission.
See.
All right. And so those would be those medical staff,
yep,
presumably. And then the people who are getting it outside of China, maybe that's the third generation of, you know, human to human. Transmission.
See. So does this mean that it's easy to, it's very contagious, or is it just easily contracted because we've never been exposed to it before?
I don't think they know. I don't think they know how readily transmissible the virus is. So how contagious it is. There is some concern though, because it is Chinese New Year in a few days, and you know, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people will be returning to their hometowns and villages in China.
Right.
And potentially this could be sort of disastrous. If these people, and then many of them have the virus, basically spreading it to their hometowns and villages across China, you know, this is potentially exposing many, many more people to this virus.
And then those people also leaving China.
And also people leaving China as well. So people coming home to China, going back to their home, to the countries they live in, and things like that.
So how do people respond to this? You can't sort of just quarantine everybody.
No, you can't. I mean, you just have to treat people as best you can in hospitals. Try and understand the virus itself. So I think the genome has been is now understood. They know the genetic sequence of this virus.
So that was quite quickly done. You figure that out, and then you figure out how you're supposed to battle it.
Right, but more than likely there won't be a drug that's going to just cure people. It's just a case of treating people and trying to keep a track of where this virus is spreading.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Next topic, we are talking about ozone depleting gases.
Yes. Before we just move on, I did want to say that so far, at least as of 2 days ago, there's only three people died that's been reported.
Okay.
Due to this virus.
That is still three people.
Still three people. More than 200 people infected.
So in that sense, you mean that they are treating it quite effectively.
They
at
are
this
treating
point.
It. Yes. So again, it's hard to say right at this point how virulent, how dangerous this thing is.
Okay. Yeah. Ozone depleting gases?
Yeah, so CFCs. So there's been an ozone hole over Antarctica and it seems to be diminishing for many years. And the cause of that ozone hole was identified as these CFC gases that were commonly used in refrigeration and aerosols and things like that. And the sort of the ozone hole was responsible for more ultraviolet light getting to us and causing cancers and things like that.
And it's not faster warming, right?
Right, but it's not the ozone hole and global warming are sort of not usually talked about in the same context because the ozone hole, basically more UV light, more cancer, ozone, global warming, CO2 is warming in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But it's well known that the gases that deplete the ozone layer are also can also lead to warming. Okay, so they're actually much more potent greenhouse gases than carbon dioxide. They're there in much, much smaller quantities, but they're much more potent. Yeah, and so there's been this puzzle that scientists that are looking at climate change and looking at the effects have wondered about, and that is that the Arctic, you may have heard, is actually warming at more than twice the average rate of the rest of the globe. So the sea ice is melting drastically, rapidly in northern Greenland and then across the Arctic, and it's the Northwest Passage has opened up and the ice is being lost at a staggering rate. Mm-hmm. And this is because the warming seems to be faster in the Arctic. And so scientists were not sure or have not been sure why this is happening. So one particular group, they looked at the effect of these fluorocarbons, these CFC gases, because they are known to warm the atmosphere, thousands of times more efficiently than carbon dioxide. In order to do this, you have to use calculations. You have to sort of simulate the climate. And that's a tremendously complicated thing to do.
Yeah.
But they looked at, these scientists looked at simulations of the climate with and without CFCs present.
Oh, wow.
And when without the CFCs, the simulation showed an average warming of less than a degree C, which is more like the rest of the planet. With CFCs at the known sort of concentrations they've been, the warming jumped to about 1.6 degrees C.
So that's a major difference.
That's a big difference, yeah. And they can also simulate the amount of sea ice, and they saw sort of major differences in the sea ice coverage in the two models. And they ran models with fixed CFC concentrations and just changed the thickness of the ozone layer, and so they could attribute the warming directly to the chemicals rather than to the substances, rather than the changes they caused in the ozone layer. So they're basically saying that the CFCs could be responsible for this effect.
What? Yeah. So, okay, what do we do with this information?
Well, there's a silver lining, I suppose.
I remember my mum telling me off for, buying deodorant, spray deodorant, which I don't do anymore. Is that those changes going to make
a difference? Well, CFCs, so in 1989, countries adopted the Montreal Protocol, which called for a phase out of these CFCs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was, 30 years ago.
But they're still there.
But they're still there, but because they've been phased out and there's very, very few left, in the environment, or at least being produced, the concentration in the atmosphere is expected to decline.
Okay.
So the effect of them is expected to decline. So that's the silver lining that, they may have caused this bigger effects, bigger temperature rise in the Arctic, but they are not going to hang around forever, and hopefully they will slowly disappear.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Man. Okay. And our final story for Dear Science today. An agricultural revolution in the UK?
Yes.
Are we going to have another one? We've already had an agricultural revolution.
Oh, no, this is just another Brexit story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, it's like, oh, another Brexit story. Since the UK leaves the European Union very soon, at the end of the month, it's going to sever ties with Europe's farm subsidy policies.
Mm-hmm.
The EU pays farmers massive amounts of money, in terms of the EU bloc, to basically not farm parts of their land and subsidizes farming considerably. So, mm-hmm. So now the UK won't be in the EU. They've got to rethink. They need to rethink how they subsidize farmers, because farmers, they can't just cut off the subsidies. That's going to, put farmers out of business.
Yeah.
Massively. But what they're doing is they're rethinking how farmers would qualify for subsidies. Yeah. So farmers, instead of being given subsidies for just simply not cultivating land, they will be given subsidy, which is the current EU system. They're being subsidies for what they're called delivering public goods, improving the public good.
So
I guess
like food, or
so. This is so. These include, so examples include sequestering carbon in trees or soil, enhancing habitat with pollinator friendly flowers.
Oh, okay.
Improving public access to the countryside. So things like that.
So other things that they can do to kind of up their contribution.
And they can then, and so they would qualify for the subsidies based on that, rather than just letting a field go fallow.
Yeah.
Actually doing something for the public good to get more subsidies.
While also farming.
While farming the land that the crops that they grow as well. Yes. So this is what's been proposed. This transition is going to be taking quite a few years to sort of phase in. So they're saying the phasing out direct subsidies over about 7 years, beginning in 2021, and these new payments will be piloted and then eventually phased in completely.
Right.
And so this has been, so EU farming subsidies have a long and somewhat sort of tortured, controversial history, because there's a lot of money, billions and billions of dollars from the EU budget is spent basically making farmers just do nothing.
Yeah, yeah? Okay.
So not grow things.
So that's where the revolutionary aspect comes in. I'm just wondering why the article's called it an agricultural revolution, because I suppose this is just kind of more of what people should be doing on the whole.
Yeah, I think so. And it's I guess Brexit, whatever your policies are, that Brexit offers, there are opportunities that open up due to Brexit. And so the UK gets to think for itself a little bit about how it's going to support farmers. And so this is hoping the farmers are then encouraged to do things that are in the public good, which is different to just not doing anything at all, which is what they've been paid for.
Well, also, because I mean, all of those examples that you just described, they're going to cost money, right? So this requires much more from the farmer to then, put in, just so that they get something out of it, which those costs will go to somewhere else.
And so I guess that all has to be factored into the subsidies. Yeah. So the subsidies now are going to be coming from the British government instead of from the EU central government. But there's a lot of complicated issues here. So if the farmers are paid for, say, planting trees, then they don't necessarily want to plant those trees in wetlands or restored peatlands, because that dries them out and actually increases the release of greenhouse gases. Okay. So it's a complicated thing, yeah? Other subsidies, for example, for equipment to inject manure into the soil could reduce both air pollution and the need for chemical fertilizers.
Yikes.
And so about 1/8 of the existing UK farm subsidies pay for environmentally friendly activities, maintaining hedgerows and other habitats. And so those efforts will expand greatly, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Very complicated.
Very complicated.
And lots of work to be done.
But interesting.
Somebody has texted in about the symptoms of the virus. Sure. So sorry to make you flip back to the other story, but if you could describe the symptoms of this virus.
As far as I know, these are respiratory symptoms. They're calling it a respiratory illness. Beyond that, I'm not so sure.
I also read somewhere about fever and cough, which, I mean, these are obviously quite common things to occur for people. So it might just be about being on alert for any kind of different feelings in terms of those normal symptoms.
And flu-like symptoms, respiratory flu-like symptoms,
Okay. Thank you, Marcus. Good to see you, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology. In the